Lina Life. I'm your host, Lina Mirmont, with a very special introduction of our guest, whom I try to introduce with the following words by Horace Mann. Seek no greatness, but seek truth, and you will find both. I hope I just touched the surface and introduce one of the greatest lawyer, human being, thinker, and mostly important, very giving person with a tremendous gift for writing. Mark Barrandes is today with us, and it is my distinct pleasure to introduce him, to thank him again to find the time to share his thoughts and so much more. And with this welcome, Mark, you are on the air with all of us, with a gratitude to be with us.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. Thank you for having me again.
I will confess that our very first conversation, I think I mentioned that before, I thought I was somewhat prepared, and I was so deeply taken by your book. I thought that I have enough to understand the main concept. I thought that I certainly comprehend some principles, learn a lot, hopefully grew as a human being. But then I understood that I really made a mistake because I just scratched the surface. Mark wrote the book which called What Were You Thinking? This book goes so way beyond just his expertise as a celebrity lawyer. This book is tremendously important, relevant message to all of us, not only about the marriage, not only about endless pains of divorces, but it's a message how to be responsible about your own action, how to think first and then do second. Mark, I would frankly tell you that even if we just go through one chapter today, because I plan to have some time left for issues of medical care, which we started to discuss last time. So if we just will open some ideas and get into the reality, get into the heart of the issue of lawyers' function, help, and role during one of the most painful times in human life, like a divorce, I think we will accomplish a tremendously important mission. Before I will address the first question, I just wanted to generally express my thought and desire that everyone, with no exception, should read this book, not when the tragedy knocks into your door, meaning that you have to be faced with a divorce, but to read it actually when you think everything is fine, just to be educated what can happen. Needless to say, before you say I do, as Mark says in the book, it can turn sometimes in a very painful I don't. You need to read this book because it will provide tremendous foundation and a ground. It will expand your mind. It will nourish your soul. It will be tremendously preventive medicine for making so many mistakes from going through a tremendous amount of pain. So if I narrow down today, and we will just talk about lawyers. It's chapter 4. Mark, I feel like a student, very truly, I absolutely honored.
Please.
Let's talk about...
When I wrote the book originally, it was written for people that were thinking about getting married or for people that were getting divorces, and I really viewed it more or less as an informed consent type of a procedure. In other words, before you have an operation, a doctor goes through and runs you through all the risks and all the possibilities of things that might go wrong and what the surgical procedures will be. Well, that's basically what I was doing with the book, except instead of doing it with a health condition, I was doing it with marriage.
And let's just take it step by step. I recall... your very entertaining and practical analogy when you need to choose the car. And please feel free to shift and to do parallel with some other ideas, for example, living together and some other issues. But the trial marriage, I think that's the words you're using. Please talk about this and give us a panoramic view how critically important to have this trial time, because trial marriage, as you said, much better than trial divorce.
That's right. Well, you know, there's been a lot of studies and writings done on our parties that live together, do they end up staying together longer if they in fact get married? And I think many of the studies have said that no, that's not the case. It's just that in my experience, the people that I've come across, it is the case. I think by living with someone, you gain a pretty clear understanding about what it might be like if you decide to spend the rest of your life with this person. You find out what things that person may do that may have been slightly annoying before become incredibly annoying. You may find out that the person is possessive, that they're jealous, that they are very reactive and can become angry quickly. You may find out that they're lazy and just like to lay on the couch, and you know it's not always a fun date. So I think it's a fair vetting of the possibilities of what you might be encountering when you get married by living with someone for a period of time before you make that final commitment or decision to say, yes, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you.
And there are a lot of issues which just not possibly to cover in one question, but because our times, our traditions, our cultural moves change so tremendously, I feel that your book will have more and more importance. In fact, it was written in 2005, and we're in 2014. I think you will not accept my compliment because of your modesty, but I think you had double intellectual vision, if not quadruple, because when I was rereading so many different episodes, and particular chapter indeed about the lawyers, I could not believe how relevant that is. In fact, in some cases, it's even sharper. And one of these cases I want to bring up is the amount of divorces we have. You said, in fact, you've done tremendous homework, enormous statistic. You stated that it will be very soon, forgive me, I don't remember exactly by what date, but it's going to be a household with one parent, that is going to be normal. With two parents, it will be an exception. And that's one of the power of your book. Please talk about that.
Well, I remember when I was in elementary school many, many years ago that there was inevitably one kid in the class whose parents were going through a divorce. And that kid was looked at differently. You know, be careful around him. He's going through a lot. His parents are getting divorced. Nowadays, it's the oddity that someone in the class has parents that have not been divorced. It's been a complete 100% turnaround. So, I mean, divorce is it is a part of our society. It is a part of our world. It is a part of our culture. And unfortunately, until people start to open their eyes a little bit more and withhold the desire to engage in a marital relationship without proper consideration, it's going to continue to be a big part of our lives.
And I think that actually it leads, I'm not staying completely to this chapter in issues about the lawyers, which I'm going to do. I will try to follow my own promise. But what you just said actually will increase because the teenage pregnancies are not diminishing. And I think the laws which will have to protect custody and some other battles would have to be more around with the modern issues, with the modern problems. How do you see some evolution of the law?
I'm sorry, evolution of...
Of the law, for example, for custody of children. How do you see laws will have to evolve and would have to be closer to the issues of the modern custody battles around the children?
Well, I think it really is something that the law becomes very flexible. As society changes, the law often changes. You know, it used to be a situation where moms always got custody. It was never going to be a father getting custody. In fact, there used to be a doctrine called the presumption of tender years, that being that children of younger years are better off to be with their mother than with their father. Now, obviously, over time, we saw that that sort of a overclassification or a categorization of the roles of parents has changed, and now fathers are equally likely to get custody of young children as the mother is. We've also seen the trend move from, well, we're not going to give sole custody to one person. It's better to have joint custody, let both parents partake in the parenting responsibilities. That trend really started down in California, and now you are actually seeing a move away from that trend because a lot of times people just can't get along. I mean, a lot of times parents just want to have the label. A dad, I'll use it as an example, a dad just wants to say, yeah, I have joint custody of the kids, even though mom may be the one actually doing all of the parenting and all the work with the kids. So, again, these kind of labels can be a little bit difficult, and I think courts have to try and work around them.
You touched upon very sensitive subject. It's love for your children. And I remember what Johann Wolfgang Goethe said, love does not dominate, it cultivates. And I believe that if there are issues with divorce, obviously it's a tremendous challenge for parents, and let's assume both parents do love their children. I think in some cases it's even more challenging for the court to make a decision. What are your comments on that?
I don't see that the courts really have difficult times making decisions. Again, every case in divorce is so different. People present themselves in certain ways, and as a result of the ways that they present themselves or as a result of the way their lawyers present themselves, the courts make decisions. And I think that there's still a fair amount of flexibility, and I think that courts are generally concerned about what the best interests of the children are and trying to, you know, weave through these very difficult situations.
I'm thrilled to hear that the courts, that you give overall picture of very positive work regarding the courts. And I would not say that the same positive picture will be attached to your characteristics of lawyers today because of certain facts which you've been talking about this chapter, as I mentioned before, chapter 4 about the lawyers. I think it's a good time for us to start to talk indeed about the lawyers. And before we'll go to your book, maybe we will start from your recent events. Maybe you can share with us your experience in a courtroom since we talk about the courts. Anything recently happened that you like to share with us?
Well, sure, I can. I was in trial earlier this week in a very nasty custody case. And there are good lawyers and there are bad lawyers, and there are good judges and there are bad judges. Now, on this particular day earlier this week, I had a very good judge. This judge listened very carefully. He was taking diligent notes throughout the proceeding. When an issue came up that he felt he needed clarification on, he would interrupt and ask questions, and was repeated over and over again when these procedural objections were raised to information coming before the court. He said, "Look, I'm interested in one thing, and that's the best interests of these three young children. That's what I care about. And if I have to bend the rules of evidence a little bit in order to get the proper information I need to make that decision, I'm going to do that because that's what I should do." It was also a case where I'm quite candid about it. The lawyer on the other side was less than impressive. And at one point, in response to a question that I had asked an expert witness on the stand, said objection, and the judge said, "Well, what's your grounds for objection?" And he said, "I don't know." And I was absolutely dumbfounded that a lawyer with a reputation as being someone that is qualified would stand up, interpose an objection, and then when asked for the basis of the objection, say, "I don't know." It made me cringe to think that some unknowing person was paying this lawyer probably $400 or $500 an hour for advice and for work, and the lawyer didn't know. So again, good lawyers, bad lawyers. This just happened to be a not so good one.
That's very scary for so many reasons. One is because this one I don't know can change inevitably all future life of his clients. And that is something I think particularly, I would say one needs to stress his or her focus in reading your chapter about the lawyers.
Well, I tried to emphasize it in the book, and I will emphasize it again right now. The most important decision that any person will make as they go through a divorce is the lawyer that they select. That lawyer will be someone that is either known to the court or not known to the court, and that lawyer's reputation will either enhance your case or it will terribly detract from your case. If that lawyer is not competent, it could cost you your children. It could cost you millions of dollars if you happen to have millions of dollars. So that is the key decision that has to be made from the inception of the idea that you're going to terminate a marriage.
It is certainly recollection of my impression from that chapter. And even though there will be certain repetition of what you just said, it's all well worth it. You made some wonderful statements. In fact, my presumptuous advice, if you can just make a group of quotations from your book, you will have another book because they're so filled with wisdom.
I'm not trying to sell books, but I can tell you, if you read the book, you'll end up saving yourself probably thousands, if not millions of dollars in the process.
And needless to say, you will become that much smarter and your intelligence will gain so much more wonderful space. So it goes every possible way. And I think it's, let me interrupt myself and tell you in case if I will not be able to put it in our conversation about the lawyers. I think I mentioned this to you. This book should be a book which needs to be part of a school curriculum. One of the reasons, and this is my personal opinion, maybe I've been too presumptuous and maybe too critical, but I think one of the reasons lawyers are so poorly educated today is because they see only two things. Number one, to learn laws, rules, facts, tricks, and be shrewd. And the second thing is to make a very lucrative business. But they just don't care, and they're not asked for understanding some minimum principles of human relationships. And I think one of the phenomenal thing about your book is that you go so deeply, so brutally honestly, with such ethic and such love for human beings that it should be definitely part of the discussion, if not prime curriculum, as an extra curriculum is a must. I just need to tell that again, Mark, and I wanted to thank you profoundly for having this patience, to have this compassion and desire to share with the world what does it take, number one, to be a lawyer, and what does it take to be a human being.
I'm humbled by your words. Thank you.
So we will go back to the chapter. One of the things you said, get advice from attorney, get support from your friends. We just touched upon the fact how difficult it is to find a good lawyer, or we started to touch upon this. And you give all kinds of advice how to find a good lawyer. This is tremendously involved process. Please talk to us about that, because I frankly learned from your book. I was very naive thinking that if I do have some good friends, then if I, God forbid, have a need for that, then I just will go by indeed some friend's recommendation. I learn otherwise. Please comment on that.
Well, I do think that asking a friend is one area that you can go to, and it's probably the only area when you're getting a divorce that you ask your friends for any advice. If a friend has had a very positive experience with a lawyer, that speaks highly of that lawyer and certainly is someone that should be considered. I think also it's important to consult a website called martindale.com. Martindale Hubbell is the actual name of the site and of the books that it represents, is a website where lawyers are rated in terms of their qualifications and ethics by other lawyers in their community as well as the judges in the community. And as a result of those ratings, a lawyer is either rated A, B, or C, and A being the highest rating that any lawyer can get. It's considered to be if you have an AV rating, you're considered to be a preeminent lawyer. So that's a pretty good indication as to the level of skill and ability of a lawyer. If the lawyer is not rated, or if they have lower ratings, then I think that should give you pause as far as whether or not you should retain them. Another way to do it is really just to go into court and watch what's going on in the courtroom. There's always divorce cases in most courts. You can see what's going on, and you can talk to people. You can watch lawyers. It's kind of like taking your kind of like buying a car, except you're taking a lawyer for a test ride. You just go sit and watch them, see how they perform, and say, all right, well, maybe that's somebody that I want to talk to.
You're also talking about I like that very much. Certain points, how to choose the lawyer, and you compare that, you made a parallel with choosing your lover. And I really like that tremendously. In fact, you have ability to speak about the most sensitive things, which some people would find tremendously hard time to even point their finger. Yet your ethic understanding and just a gift makes the most complicated issues, especially in the emotional area, very real and possible to follow through. I will bring a few points of your suggestions. In fact, I made some notes here that there are some fundamental qualities, connections you are looking. It's trust, number one. Comfort in confiding in your lawyer, number two. I will just make two more points and then you will elaborate. You have to feel comfortable with this person. So the person should be gentle, cannot be rude, cannot abrupt you. They should be responsive. They should return calls. And the last one, which is particularly very important, listen and hear. Listen, it's a one quality, very important. But hear what client says is critically important. I didn't complete the list, Mark. I think you will do much better job than my completion of your list.
No, I think Vinny, that you've hit on the major points. A lawyer should be someone that you are comfortable working with. You're going to be sharing the most secretive personal details of your life. You're going to be exposing vulnerabilities probably that you've never exposed to anyone else. You're going to be telling your lawyer things that are probably embarrassing about either yourself or about your other spouse. It needs to be someone that you're comfortable with. If you're pent up and have anxiety about even speaking to your lawyer, he or she is probably not going to be able to do a very good job for you. You must be able to communicate effectively. A good lawyer needs to know when to listen. He needs to know when a client is, venting just emotion to get it off of his or her chest. And you need to be able to pull out the salient points of the client's experience so that you can take those points and then turn them into some sort of a tactical advantage or a positive point that can be utilized in representing the client. So communication between your lawyer, liking your lawyer as a person, it's really good if you do like your lawyer, and if your lawyer likes you, you'll end up working much better together.
There is one description which might shake some people thinking that you might go too far or too deep. I certainly didn't feel that way. I think that this episode in your book, which I'm going to read, is just such an arrow to the central point. What I'm speaking about you're talking about, I'm speaking of the dedicated community law practitioners. In parentheses, they prefer to proctologists. And
yeah, well, again, the reference to the proctologist came from, divorce lawyers are like the proctologists of the law, because these lawyers have their fingers in places that you never imagined that someone else would go. And a lot of times it's not a pleasant experience. A lot of bad things are exposed. A lot of things that, for lack of a better word, might really stink. So as a result of that, I make the comparison. I guess it's somewhat humorous, but as well as it being humorous, it's also very true.
So true, and I just felt divided, truly union of opposites. In one sense, I had to shake myself and said, well, this is truly a remarkable human, not only observation, but understanding, so explosively truthful, yet it comes from the lawyer. I just wanted to tell our readers that we have tremendous privilege and memorable time with Mark Barrandes. I call Mark a globally placed lawyer who is magnet of the truth, experience, and tremendous bravery to tell us all what does it take to have a family. Mark, I like to read one feedback which you received among so many, and I just will preserve the person's privacy and the name, but I like to read it if you do not mind.
I think you're talking about what the comment that I received yesterday.
Yes.
Yes, please. No, that's fine.
Hi, Mark. I just finished your book, What Were You Thinking? And it was truly wonderful. I was ready to leave my marriage of 17 years, but I truly am reconsidering. My wife is such a good person. I wish I loved her the way you love your wife. But it is not just like that. I think after reading your book, I realize that maybe what we have along with our two children is good enough. No matter what happens, your book accomplished what I'm sure you wanted to. It made me think and rethink. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, that was a very kind note that I got just completely out of the blue from someone that had just finished the book. And, you know, I think, you know, if I responded back to him, what I would be saying is a good marriage doesn't have to be a perfect marriage, you know, or a perfect marriage is not always necessary, always good. You know, it's a difficult process to go through. Living with someone for years and years and a family and the issues between not only within your own family but the in-laws and everyone else, it's a difficult thing to go through. But let me tell you, divorce is far worse. I'll give you one other anecdote from the other day. The trial that I was doing was just, as I said, it was very, very nasty during the course of the trial. And unfortunately, because I had a opposing party that was trying to be very evasive, I had to be a bit caustic in my examination of him. And by the time it was over with, not to be an egomaniac, he was basically destroyed. And one of the bailiffs in the courtroom came up to me and said, I just want to tell you something. I'm going to go home and tell my wife how much I love her tonight, because I never, ever want to go through what I just saw today.
Mark, can I congratulate you? I know it's so modest little crumb compared to so many voices, so many family tears you have saved. But I just wanted to congratulate you, because it's getting exceedingly more difficult to find and to fight for the truth. And I think it doesn't just take a celebrity level, which you overly deserve, but it just takes that perseverance and tremendous talent. I will, if you permit me, you just remind me something I like to read, because it's always on my desk. Jerome Shestock was a tremendously important lawyer, statesman, and a human being. I do not want to go into all his accomplishments, from being United States ambassador in the United Nations. And I just wanted to say, because his family became friends for over 30 years. I became very familiar with some of his work and his writings. And I like to just to read very quickly little paragraph from his short article about the pain and the joy of our profession, meaning law profession. The melding of human concerns and the law, I think, is a part of the worthiness and joy of our profession. And I think that you certainly demonstrate in your interpretation of your gift, of your dedication to your profession. And I feel very confident that since you're in the courtroom, many lives will be saved.
Yes. I can say is that, you know, when you're in the courtroom, you try to do your very best, and you try to think about what's best, of course, for your client. I always think about what's best for the families and try to counsel and advise people on that. As we've discussed, and as the quote indicates, it's a very difficult process to go through, and it's one that, you know, it goes to the heart of all of our emotions.
You just mentioned a little earlier about what does it take to be a good marriage. I don't know, you inspire me to bring all these thoughts of our very famous people. Muir said, a great marriage is not when perfect couple comes together. It is when an imperfect couple learns to enjoy their differences.
That's very sage.
So, and that's what one of the things I strongly understood and learned from your book, there can be noble differences, but it can be rotten differences. And you certainly show in different parts of the books that it is not a must to save marriage. If it is not possible, then everyone has their right to follow their own mind, instinct, and happiness. How would you qualify in that situation? How would you advise young people, for example, we discussed that they should live together, but what else would you give them as a principal advice to get married or not to get married?
You should really reflect upon what the very worst aspects are of your potential spouse. And you have to reach an understanding that you're either in agreement or not in agreement with living with a person that possesses those qualities that you may not particularly like. Because more often than not, those qualities are only going to become even more apparent with each and every year that passes in the marriage. A shrill voice at the very beginning of a relationship will be deafening by the time you're, 5 years into it. I think that people have to understand that marriage is not always fun. A good marriage takes hard work. I mean, these may be things that are said by many others than me, but it does. It requires a lot of work. And people that say, well, my marriage doesn't require any work, I then question how good of a marriage it is, because you really do need to concentrate and be aware of other people's feelings, emotions, how you can assist them, how you can make them more confident, how you can understand them, how you can have empathy for their concerns and their emotions. These are all things that have to be weighed. It is not all fun and games. It takes work.
Only because I really like to touch on healthcare, I feel very divided and somewhat frustrated, because there are some vitally, critically important points which I wanted to talk to about more. For example, high-tech love. There are phenomenal things you're talking about. As if you were a computer science, I totally forgot that you're the lawyer. It's just information.
Well, but I'll be honest with you. That's the one chapter in the book I probably shouldn't have written, because even the information that I said in there, while most of it still works, it's just that the technological advances in the years since I wrote the book are just amazing. So, and that's just the starting point. I certainly wouldn't rely just on what I said in that chapter. I think that there's a lot more vehicles that are available now if you're into. I'm not going to say snooping. Well, I will say snooping on your spouse or finding out if things are going on. There's many other options available than what I was able to set forth at that time in 2005.
Well, but still, again, message is there. Scare is there. And I hope that if we will have an opportunity to continue on your book and some other modern issues of our society, I think that what you pointed out there is just augmented today. And I think some of your articles also confirm that this, I call it cyber love, it's just a completely new devastation in human relationship. So I will hope that we might continue on that, but I like to shift into medical care, because I like to take advantage and have your thoughts on this sharply important issue. We did talk last time about using some medication and have a danger of misusing some illegal medications or medications which are not properly made. I wanted to have some of your thoughts on the medical care today, because it's so, so relevant. And I was thinking to make several points. Number one, this segment of our conversation, which will be, of course, so much shorter than this subject requires, but it is not to come to some kind of a conclusion of a nearly perfect system. It's not going to be any touch of some kind of a political conflicts between the different parties, who thinks what. I like to establish a human plateau where you can comment, because you have such a tremendous experience. And preparing for that segment of our conversation, I just wanted to bring certain subjects. I think we have to, every citizen needs to be aware that we're dealing with a huge national issues like epidemic disease, like diabetes, heart disease, some obesity. I just mentioned a few. But also there are some relatively new problems compared to this one, like autism, like a premature birth, and some other issues which are heavyweight to cover all this medical expenses. So there is no really nearly perfect formula, but there are things to think about. And I think everyone needs to be extremely responsible and educated as much as they can to figure out how they can apply their own medical needs to this nearly forming system. I don't have a particular questions, but your thoughts will be appreciated.
Well, I you know, the whole issue of healthcare and the availability of medicines, the cost of medicines, is something that is, you know, interested me for a long time. And you know, frankly, it's a very difficult problem that we've had to deal with. I think that, you know, for your listeners' benefit, just to take prescription medications, you know, there are so many medicines that are out there now, but they're very expensive, and unless you have very good insurance coverage, some of the times people can't get the medicines that they need. So one of the major points that I like to emphasize is that there really are a number of pharmaceutical companies that have very good patient assistance programs. Many times, many of these drugs that are extremely expensive, the companies are willing to give away if you are qualified to receive these medicines. So the first point I'd make is that although we are in a very difficult situation with the cost of medications and the like, you need to really get on the internet and explore patient assistance programs, not only offered by the individual drug companies, but by other pharmaceutical trade associations and the like that are of benefit to patients. Healthcare, I don't know where it all ends up when it's all said and done. I think that with respect to doctors, they're just like lawyers. They're very good doctors and they're very bad doctors. I'll never forget the underlying line that, you know, what does a person say to a doctor who graduates last in his class in medical school? Well, the answer is, congratulations, doctor. So people need to be astute, and I think that the internet and the web in general provides a wonderful benefit for people to be able to gather information about their own health and well-being, to become well-informed, and to be able to better manage their own health care, but it doesn't take the place of a doctor. I mean, you can try and self-diagnose yourself, but it's a very dangerous thing to do. So I'm not sure where you wanted to go with that, Lena, but that's just some general thoughts in terms of healthcare.
No, this is incredibly clear direction, frankly, and that is exactly the message I wanted to hear from you. It's a sense how we're supposed to think, how we're supposed to direct our actions, and unfortunately, the way system is today, even doctors with the good qualifications have certain restrictions. Now, I particularly was quite stunned by learning the fact that your own doctor will not be able to visit you in case if you're in a hospital, because at that time he will miss an opportunity to make some money at his office. I feel that is an obstacle right there, but this is probably a small issue compared to number of other issues, which hopefully will be somewhat balanced, where requirement will meet its answers and its care. This is, Mark, I just wanted to touch upon this. Of course, as I predicted, I would be drowned and totally magnetized by your book again. And I think these final thoughts on medical care are very valuable. And if you will be inclined, we can continue on that. But I just wanted to make sure that this is just a beginning of this profoundly relevant issue for all of us. And as a final question, I just wanted to ask you, would you have some suggestions, for example, when you addressing these drug situations, when pharmaceuticals can do some a little easier pricing, do you feel that any of those pharmaceuticals company are reliable as long as it is in the United States?
I certainly think so. And there's other companies that are outside the United States, like Teva in Israel, that also has very good patient assistance programs. They're not widely advertised, but they're there. And they actually look for people to be able to provide free medicine too. far as a Google suggestion, what I would suggest, the easiest way to do it would be punch in the name of the drug that you're you need to take, and then just type in patient assistance right after that. And I bet you come up with a direction probably to the pharmaceutical manufacturer's website, a specific page that deals with that very issue of giving away discounted or free medication.
Mark, coming back to make this arch back to your book to be somewhat, in a sense, very grateful, I wanted to thank you for writing this tremendously and very sincerely painted picture how to be, number one, honest with yourself, and number two, how to think even when it hurts. I wanted to thank my guest, Mark Barandes, whose celebrity title means everything in the courtroom, in his family life, and to all of us who listens to him and very grateful to what he is doing. Mark, I wanted to say until soon, thank you so, so much for sharing your time. I wanted to bring my sincere gratitude to your family who allowed you and allowed your time to spend with us. And your last word.
Well, it's fine. I mean, I appreciate all your kind words. I'm just reflecting upon, you know, if I told one of my children that I need to do a radio interview, somebody wants to hear what I have to say, and they would ask me, why? Well, why do they want to hear from you? So I'm humbled by what you say, and I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, no, thank you again. I hope for the continuation, and we will wish you the most of the energy and more books, more thoughts. We're waiting, and we're grateful for what you've done. That was Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmond. We wanted to conclude with the thought that even though we're living in a very hectic world, there should be time for thinking. And if you don't have enough time for thinking, you need to find this. And the best way to find this is to read this golden book, What Were You Thinking? By Mark Barandes.